Hello and welcome to the Browns Blitz. Today is Wednesday, January the 8th of 2020. This is our first show of the new decade. And this is episode 33. And I'm excited to bring in a new guest. First one of the year, of course. I have with me Eric Platts. Eric, how are you doing? We'll say this evening because it is this evening. How's it going?
That's right. Rod, it's going great, man. Really pleased to have an opportunity to talk to you and talk a little bit about our passion for the Browns. So this will be fun.
Yeah, now your Twitter handle is why don't you just give that out?
Yeah, easy enough.
You go by Apex Dog, but that's not your Twitter handle, is it?
Yeah, I guess technically it's at Benefits Jedi. So that's actually technically the Twitter handle, but most probably know me as Apex Dog, and what I've been kind of just using for the last several years. So, but yeah, at Benefits Jedi is actually my, if you're looking me up, but I think you can find me either way though. So.
That's where people can find you. And you were telling me you play quite a bit of football in your day. So why don't you just fill us in a little bit on, you know, on what you played and, you know, what positions and what you did for your career.
Yeah, no, football is obviously a love that we all share in common. But I was fortunate. I got to, you know, play in high school. Then I kind of made my own luck and sent out a lot of recruiting tapes and eventually found a home at Methodist College in Fayetteville, North Carolina, which is a little D3 school. So those up in Northeast Ohio, think about Mount Union and Baldwin Wallace and some of those schools. But then I was fortunate to actually receive a scholarship and transferred out to a Division II school up in West Virginia called Concord College, and was a quarterback throughout college. And then actually my closest stint with the NFL would have just been a tryout where I got to perform a little bit in front of a New York Giants scout, but that went nowhere, and I ended up playing semi-pro for 12 years in the Raleigh-Durham area, which was a lot of fun. Got to continue to play, but now I'm paying for it at age 44 with all the bumps and bruises and back pains and knee pains and all those things. My daytime job is selling, and I've been in sales and in the employee benefits field for the last 20 years. So it's been a good run doing that. But yeah, loved playing football. Miss it. In fact, I think it was funny on Facebook today. I mean, one of my photo popped up, I think, of my final season in the semi-pros, and I blasted that out. And, of course, I find that my best friends are guys I played football with. And, of course, they're all, you know, we're all reminiscing about times of that season. So, good stuff.
Yeah. So, you play quarterback all 12 years when you're playing semi-pro?
Yeah, I actually, good question. So played through college and I played through the majority of my semi-pro career. But towards the end there, the last 5 years, I just had a really bad shoulder in my right arm. So I transitioned over to a tight end, which a lot of quarterbacks tend to have the best hands on the team, because what do they do all day? They play catch all day, right? So
yeah,
that's what they do, right? If you ask any quarterback, they'll tell you, hey, you know, the best hands are often quarterbacks. So I moved over to tight ends because I wanted to keep playing, and did that. I think that picture out on Facebook is where I was wearing 81. So that was a fun time. But I didn't care. I just loved playing football. I didn't care what position I played. I'd look to plug myself in everywhere I could, special teams, anything, just to play.
That's pretty cool. So. Are you originally from Cleveland?
Yeah, so I was born in Willoughby and spent some time in Ashtabula. But when people ask me where I'm from, I usually will tell them Painesville, because my grandparents and aunts and uncles all still live in the Painesville Manor, Fairport Harbor area. So it's great because, you know, even though we moved to North Carolina when I was young, I still get to go back and, you know, people ask me where I'm from. I don't say Raleigh, North Carolina. I still say the Cleveland area. I just, you know, you're born there. It's just in your blood. And
it see all my change.
It doesn't change.
Yeah.
You know, so it's home, and I still love going back. In fact, it's great because one of my sales reps that reports to me just inherited the Cleveland territory. So I said, hey, as soon as you get some appointments up there, I'm coming up. Go see some family and all that good stuff. So
nice. Well, we wanted to talk some Browns tonight, and with all of the talk about the coaching search and everything, we thought we'd go a different direction. So we're just going to kind of look at the roster a little bit and kind of think just a little bit about what the new head coach, GM, whoever they may happen to turn out to be, who they have to work with, who you think they should build around, you know, and maybe we'll just kind of mix in some of your thoughts on the season, kind of what you think of some of these guys and kind of where you think some of this is headed.
Yeah, no, it's a good topic, Rod. And I think it's a good point. When you look at, my thing with the new regime coming in is I want to find somebody who can take advantage of Baker Mayfield. When I look back at this year, I think where Freddie went wrong was not adapting the offense to Baker's strength. And if you look at the statistics out on PFF, you'll see that, you know, Baker's strengths really were from play action. And maybe a little bit RPO. I know Lincoln Riley ran a lot of run-pass option with him, obviously, at Oklahoma. But if you watched Baker, especially on the deep play actions where he's either got a naked boot or he's booting out or he's waggling, you know, he's completing his passes at a high rate. And you know, I wonder what could have been had, you know, Baker had an opportunity to play under, you know, a Shanahan offense where they use those West Coast concepts and the stretches and sweeps. And I just think whoever comes in has got to be willing to adapt to Baker's strengths and look at what he can do well and capitalize on that. But, you know, from a roster perspective, I think it's interesting because I think there's guys on this roster that are probably going to see some turn. And, you know, areas that I think are huge weaknesses are probably the same areas that you feel, right? I think offensive line, both tackles need to be addressed. You know, I'd like to see what a little more of Kendall Lamb. I'd like to see what Forbes has to offer because I don't think he ever saw the field this year. You know, there's some guys I'd like to see. But, you know, when you mentioned this topic, one of the names that, you know, came to the top of my list was Terrence Mitchell. You know, from a defensive back perspective, Greedy Williams got plugged in. Of course, you know, he's a high draft pick. He's going to play. But when T. Mitch came in, I just felt like the secondary was immediately stronger. And, you know, whoever comes in as the coach, depending on the defense, and this is why I kind of like Robert, I think his last name is Sala, from the 49ers. And I would also probably say the same about the former Detroit Lions coach, Schwartz.
Schwartz,
you know, both of those guys like to run, you know, press corners. And I think that's where our strengths are. I think part of the reason our defense struggled so bad is we weren't taking advantage of Ward and his capabilities as a press corner. Greedy, you know, he's playing off, but you know, Terrence Mitchell's a good corner that can play press. So my concern is, you know, what happens to Terrence Mitchell? Can you keep three starting corners when one of those may not necessarily be a great slot, which is why we have TJ Carey? So, you know, I'd be curious. I'd love to see more Terrence Mitchell. I think Freddie Kitchens should have played him more in place of Greedy. I think that would have helped the defense, especially when we weren't getting to the quarterback, I deem kind of the end of this season really was that Steeler game, even though we won the game. But losing Myles Garrett, I just thought, was such a devastating blow on the season that the defense really never recovered.
Yeah, it changed the entire defense. When you take Miles out,
it did.
Yeah.
You know, so when we get into next year, you know, I'm hoping whoever's defensive coordinator, I hope it's a, you know, somebody who's willing to really leverage that defensive line and leverage those defensive backs to play more press corner. Cause I think that's the whole idea. If you can get pressure from your front four, then your secondary should be pressing. Cause that's going to create turnovers. And you look at us in turnovers this year, and we had to be near the bottom of the league in terms of turnovers created. So, you know, love to see whoever comes in, you know, address that and take advantage of the roster there. But, you know, I think there's so much. I'd like to see more out of Sione Takitaki. Mack Wilson, I think we're going to see a lot more of. So I think we're okay at linebacker, but I still think, and this might upset some Browns fans when they listen to this, but, you know, I love Joe Schobert, and he makes plays. But middle linebacker, man, you need to be a plugger. I want to see a guy that's going to stuff the run at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, we're letting guys run the ball 5 and 7 yards a clip, and he's accumulating a lot of tackles. But how many tackle for losses and how many plays is he making at the line of scrimmage? That's when I view a middle linebacker, that's an area of weakness for us, in my opinion. Even though he's a heck of a playmaker, I just need to see more plays made at the line of scrimmage in a 4-3 defense. What do you think, Rod?
Well, yeah, I mean, Joe Schobert's definitely an interesting case because, well, I mean, he's a free agent, first of all, so you got to find out what the Browns...
Are we going to bring him back?
Yeah, are Browns, what kind of talks are they even going to have with Joe at this point? But I see what you're saying, because the run has been an issue for however many years you want to go back, and I think we're all tired of it. And you know, Joe is a great player. He does a lot of things well, but plugging the gap in the middle and stuffing the run is not really what he does. So, I think that's something to where you're going to see who comes in, you know, as the coach, and who comes in as coordinators, and what kind of playbooks they bring, and what kind of systems they run, and then they're going to want to get players in to go according to those systems. And let's just hope like heck that the whoever they bring in wants to run a 4-3 and not a 3-4, because we've been through that enough times.
We can't go through that again. I mean, I don't think we've got the talent to make that shift. And
I think we'll see a bunch of people jumping ship if we go back to a 3-4.
I totally agree. And you think about our defensive line, you know, Chad Thomas, impressive as heck. I was really excited to see what he was able to do this year.
Yeah, definitely.
Olivier Vernon, it's funny, once Olivier Vernon got hurt, I had these images of Willie McGinnis in his latter years where he just could not even make a pursuit angle towards and contain the edge. And certainly Olivier Vernon, once he got that knee injury, it just, he was a shell of himself. But when he's healthy and when Myles Garrett is healthy and Chad Thomas is looking like he's a player, you know, I'm excited about our defensive line, as long as I think we still may need one more person at depth for defensive tackle to help out Ogunjobi and Richardson. I could see us potentially looking for some more depth there. I think that would be good.
I think they had some guys play decent, later in the season. But yeah, I mean, you're always looking to upgrade there. Definitely. I agree with you.
Yep. Yeah, and then safety. So, are we going to keep Demaryius Randall? If you follow him on Twitter, I don't know if he wants to play for the Browns anymore. I don't know. I couldn't follow him. His cryptic tweets.
I don't think Demaryius Randall's going to be back. That would just be my guess. When these safeties, especially safeties that are pretty darn good, hit free agency, they're getting a boatload of money, and I just don't see the Browns paying that kind of money to keep Demaryius Randall at safety.
How about Redwine? I mean, I thought he came, he was able to step in and play. Rookie mistakes oftentimes, but I mean, I wonder if that's a guy that is ready for the big time and to start next year. And Justin Burris, I like the way he played, and Eric Murray's going to come back from the injury, but I still think that's probably going to be an area of the draft they have to address, is at the safety position.
I think they're going to address it. I don't think any of those guys will be handed a job at safety. I would be surprised. I think there's a lot of room for improvement there. But like you said, Redwine was playing as a rookie, so you expect some errors, we'll just have to see what happens at safety. But I would think that they would be bringing some guys in. I think it'll be addressed in the draft again.
And I tell you, one other guy that shined a little bit this year, I don't know what his future is with the Browns, but Steven Carlson at tight end. You know, here's a guy that came out of the Ivy League and made a really huge catch for us, but showed some ability, right? In fact, for whatever reason, you know, why Njoku was on the sideline. I mean, you had Carlson and Ricky Seals-Jones, you know, really out there being the featured tight ends, it felt like, on pass downs, you know, with a sprinkling of Harris. And but just essentially, I kind of, when he came in, it was, he provided a little bit of a spark, but at 6'4", 240, I don't know if he's going to be on the roster moving forward, and I don't know what the new regime will do with a guy like that, but he definitely came in and contributed, which was nice.
Yeah, tight end has kind of had me, you know, scratching my head kind of all season. I know that David Njoku kind of apparently had some issues with Freddie, or maybe it was with John Dorsey. I don't know. I don't know what happened there. It's really none of my business at this point. But you know, I see the Browns as having four tight ends, and I really don't know the contract status of any of these guys. Njoku's got to be signed at least through next year, I would say. But Carlson, Harris, and Ricky Seals-Jones, these guys all flashed at least a little bit, right? So, I mean, I guess it's who you like. I mean, Ricky Seals-Jones really looked good at times. He looked bad at times too, but Demetrius Harris did not show up as much as I thought he would, as much as I expected him to. But, you know, how much of that was the offense? I'm with you on Stephen Carlson. He looked pretty good when he was given the chance. So I don't know. How do you rank those four guys? I mean, I'm assuming you're going to put Njoku as the number one tight end. But how do you rank those other three guys?
Yeah, I would go, you know, if I'm creating my roster, and Njoku one, you know, I'd probably go Ricky Seals-Jones two, but then what you're running into there is there's not a lot of size at the tight end there to really have a good blocking game. I mean, Farrell Brown's your biggest tight end at 6'6", 258. I'm looking at the roster right now. I think it's an area actually they're going to end up addressing in the draft. I actually believe, I don't know if they'll, how high they'll go, but I could see a third round pick potentially being spent on a tight end, because what we lack, and this, you become too predictable. If you can't have a tight end that can block effectively and catch passes effectively, when you've got an individual that can only do one, which we seem to have a roster full of guys that really just want to go out and catch passes. They're not really great sealing the edge. Right. And that's, If you watched some of the plays where Baker got lit up, it's where our tight ends are, for whatever reason, locked up on a defensive end, and they're not able to hold their ground. And so that they've got to, in my opinion, get out there and find a 6'5", 250, 260 tight end that can stretch the field, you know, play it in the seams, play in between the numbers, but also, more importantly, you know, almost kind of be that sixth linemen on the field, right? That can stick their nose in there and get a seal block on the edge. So I mean, it's got to see that more often.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean,
Farrell Brown.
Farrell Brown. Yeah, I mean, yep. David Njoki is the next biggest tight end at 246, and that's really not real scary out of a guy who's trying to line up alongside of offensive linemen and block somebody.
But I still think, you know, I'd like to see, you know, and the other part with David too, and that frustrates me, is he catches the ball twice. I just feel like, he always is bobbling the ball, which, you know, ultimately, I if you look at the one interception that Mayfield threw, I want to say it was against the Ravens, where it was Njoku's game back, and it wasn't the greatest pass, but, you know, David went up, bobbled it, hit the ground, and somehow the defensive back came away with it. I think it might have been for a touchdown, right?
Maybe that could be. I'll bet Baker had five balls this year that hit his receiver's hands and ended up being interceptions. Balls that were almost caught by his receiver and then handed off to a defensive back.
It was a bizarre season for him.
It was strange.
I was at the home opener for the Titans game, and it was electric. It was an absolutely electric environment. And we take the ball, drive straight down the field, and Higgins scores that touchdown. I'm like, here it is. This is the way it's going to be this year. We're gonna average 30 plus points a game, and we're gonna dominate. And we're gonna go to 11-5 and 12-4, and then it just fell apart.
That's what a lot of us thought.
Yeah. Very, very, very upsetting season. I would actually, out of the 1-31 stretch, this may be more disappointing this season, because we just were so prepared to see a winner and see these guys. You know, and I'm also going to say this. I don't know if this is popular or not, Rod, but they weren't a fun team to cheer for. For whatever reason, me personally, I could not get behind some of the personalities. I love Jarvis Landry; think he's fantastic. But OBJ and the whole, visor and cleats and goat cleats and all that, I couldn't get behind that. Baker's, I don't know. Frustrated me. I think a lot of people felt that way,
Eric. I think that I heard that from other people, that they were not a very likable team. And I agree. I love, I'm a big Jarvis Landry fan. I love Nick Chubb. I wish every guy on the team was like Nick Chubb.
Most telling piece of Nick Chubb for me was when he was mic'd and he had just scored a touchdown. I think OBJ said, "Man, can I get a touchdown?" And Nick Chubb said, "Man, I just want to get a win."
Yeah, and
that's what we need to be hearing. That's what we need to be hearing from the team. Oh man.
Well, let's talk about these wide receivers, because I don't know. Jarvis Landry had a huge season. He was hurt most of the season, and he just went out there and just played, and he put up some great numbers. OBJ was hurt most of the year. Aside from all his shenanigans, he still has 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
The first Browns duo to do that, in 12 years, I think. First time they've had 2,000-yard receivers since 07, I believe. But then Rashard Higgins kind of gets benched, doesn't really play. And then, he saw Kadarrell Hodge and Damian Ratley seem to get his reps later in the season. Since you have a quarterback's eye, what was your thought on just some of the chemistry or lack thereof between Baker and some of these guys?
I thought it was significant. I really did. I thought, I think a lot was made out of the OBJ missing OTAs and the mini camps and things, and then the lack of reps, during training camp even, by a lot of the first teamers. If you ever watch some of the highlights on ClevelandBrowns.com, most of the passes you saw Baker throwing were to guys like Ratley, like Higgins, the tight ends. You didn't see a lot of it during the 7-on-7s or 11-on-11s. You didn't see OBJ and Jarvis making plays, for whatever reason, held them out. And I think the receiving position, I think we've got talent, but the concern I have is both Landry and Beckham are looking at a potential surgery this offseason. And I don't know if you saw the interview, Landry said he could be out six months.
Yeah.
Or more. So
that could really set him back. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, significantly. And then OBJ, he's got the sports hernia that he may need to get an operation on. Well, obviously I hope he does, because that was what the fallback was. That was why they said that, hey, he's been hurting all year. So if that's the case, let's get it done, right? Get it done early so that, Baker indicated that, he wanted to get the receiving group together as soon as possible and start working out with them early and often. So I think that needs to be done, and that as early as possible, because I felt the chemistry was off. And I tweeted to Higgins. I said, man, you know, somebody needs to come to you with a book deal on the 2019 Cleveland Browns season, because I think you could write a heck of a book, and I think you'd sell a lot of copies, because I'm sure he's got some stories to tell on what went down there with him and Joku and others. But strange to see Ratley, who has some speed. I mean, he's got
speed and size. I mean, yeah, definitely.
So I can see him playing, but I never could make heads or tails of why Higgins was held out all year, essentially. Bizarre, because that was Baker's, that was Baker's go-to guy, especially on third down. And who does he go to when the game's on the line in the Buffalo Bills game? You know, Higgins caught the winning touchdown pass, which was great to see. I hope that they re-sign him and keep him around. I'd love to see him reunited and a resurgence of him in 2020.
Yeah, I hope so. Hope so too. Well, they're probably going to need him with the injuries to the two main guys. So,
Agreed.
Let's talk about these running backs. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. I mean,
do we get to keep them both is the question.
Well, I mean, Nick Chubb's going to be here. Kareem Hunt is a restricted free agent. So the Browns can absolutely keep him for at least another season. And we'll see. I guess my question to you is, how did you like the way they were used in tandem? What do you see as the best way to use those guys? Going forward.
Yeah, great question. I think I like some of what Freddie did with them this year. There were some points where he lined them up in the I formation and went old school 1980s football, and we got some good chunk plays out of that. I liked seeing that. I like seeing them both on the field. I think Nick Chubb is your featured back, because I think Nick is a guy who's not going down until the third or fourth guy hits him, right? He's just a hard man to tackle. And what I love about Kareem just plays with passion and plays hard. I think what's, got him as far as he has is how hard he plays. They're very complimentary in that way between Chubb and Hunt. If we're able to keep both of them, if they don't use, I'm hoping they don't try to trade Hunt and gain assets for him. But assuming we keep both of those guys, I would like to see them both on the field more. I think if you get a great offensive coordinator, I think the opportunity there to design plays where the formation looks very similar, but yet you run different plays with them in the backfield, taking advantage of them both. So if Baker's in the gun and you have Hunt or Chubb on either side of them, you can run a lot of misdirection. You can do some RPOs off of that. I could see a lot of opportunity with both of them in the backfield. You just got to be creative. And I think Freddie tried to get a little too creative and too cute on certain plays instead of just going straight at. I think both are great downhill runners, and you got to take advantage of those. And when you have great downhill runners, you've got to have play designs that are quick. You can't have long extending. If you think about a lot of the goal line plays where we just never got in the end zone.
Slow developing plays.
You can't do that with those types of backs. Give them the ball right away. Let them get in. I think there's great opportunity with both of them. And then you got a little bit of depth with Dontrell Hilliard and D'Ernest Johnson. I actually really like D'Ernest's contribution once they plugged him in at kick return. I thought that was good.
I agree.
He provided a little bit of a spark there because we weren't really getting a lot out of Hilliard. I thought Johnson was a better solution. But I think that's an area of strength for this team. I do, not to quote Tony Grossi, but I do think that we would benefit from a fullback. I'm just being honest. I don't believe that the fullback position is dead in the NFL. There are too many teams that are playing this weekend as in the divisional playoff teams that have fullbacks that effectively use them. And so I don't think that position is dead, and I don't think you get the same production out of a tight end to lead block.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and I would say there's a pretty fair chance we see a fullback in Cleveland next season.
Yeah, and we're the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, why wouldn't? Well, yeah, I should qualify that. Yeah, but why wouldn't you when you have two? If you're gonna have two running backs like the Browns have, and you're gonna make a strong commitment every game to try to just run the heck out of the ball. I would think in order when you have Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt and a fullback, especially if they can get the offensive line patched up a bit, why wouldn't you establish the run, to set up the pass or either way, vice versa, have that ability.
Yeah. I'm pretty opinionated on this topic. I think this is Nick Chubb's team. I think Baker Mayfield plays a role in this team. I think whoever becomes the head coach and offensive coordinator needs to build an offense centered around Nick Chubb with Kareem Hunt. I think it needs to be a run-oriented offense. I think we've got amazing weapons on the outside, but I don't think this is an offense. I don't know that Baker is the quarterback, and I know we'll probably land on Baker here in a minute, but I don't know that Baker, I don't know if he's a 40 plus pass attempt guy, and we're going to go out and win that way. I think we have proven if we can control the line of scrimmage and control the play clock, we can win a lot of games with the score of 24-17. And see Chubb with 110, 115 yards and see Hunt with another 50 or 60. I think that is the formula. I'd love to see more of that.
Oh, I'm going to agree with you. When you have a guy like Nick Chubb, I don't care who your quarterback is, he doesn't need to throw the ball 40 times a game.
Would we all love to be the Tennessee Titans right now? I think so. Right?
Yeah.
I'd love to be. And look what they did. If you look at the back, I heard this on – I want to say, I think it was actually on Cleveland Browns Daily. I think Nathan Zagura was mentioning it. He said something to the effect of he was reading off the running back there. And why his name is escaping me, but
Derrick Henry. Yeah. Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry per attempt from the first 8 games. And then the last 8 games, I mean, it almost doubled. So he was averaging 5-6. In a couple games, he averaged 8 yards per attempt. And that's because in football, especially as the seasons change, defenses get tired. We should be running the ball 25 to 30 times a game between Hunt and Chubb. And I think if we do that, we'll find ourselves playing in January. I really do believe that. So
I agree.
It's a great – we have got a couple great assets there. And I'm pretty thankful for that. We just have to find the right coaching staff that's going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. So we're kind of getting up against it time-wise here. What is there any other topic you wanted to cover before we wrap up, Eric?
Yeah. Just love your thoughts on Baker's season this year. I know he regressed. He definitely did. I don't think it was all on him. I think the offensive play calling was just a mess, right? I think it was a mess. I think he was hurt by lack of chemistry with his receivers. I think he missed Higgins. I think he missed Njoku. But certainly he was not himself. He was not accurate. Just love to get your take on his play, and then also love to get your take on the chip on his shoulder. Is it time for that chip to disappear and him start, behaving like an NFL quarterback, whatever that means, but interested in interested in your.
Well, I'll take that part. I'll take that part first. I think that whatever head coach and organization, you know, organizational setup we see come in, I think we're going to see some changes in Baker, and you know, I think some guys are going to have to be humbled a little bit and realize that. That they need to learn, they need to dedicate themselves to football, and you know, and I'm not saying that Baker wasn't taking his job seriously or anything, but yeah, I mean, I think he's going to have to just concentrate on doing his job and being a professional and not worry about some of this other stuff. And I know that's not all going directly toward the chip. But the chip comes up a lot, and
yeah,
and it really doesn't need to. We all know about the chip. Being in Cleveland, every guy on this team has a chip. Okay, you come to play in Cleveland, you've got the chip. So just go out there and just play with it. We know it's there. All right. As far as his play, I think the points you said are all valid. There were just a lot of factors. You know, I've said on this podcast a lot of times, it's normal for a guy in his sophomore season to regress a little bit. And I think Baker just had a lot of other things that piled on top of that, which are a lot of the things that you said, you know, the receiver stuff, the plays. I think he just kind of got into his own head after a while, the offensive line, not giving him protection, you know, after a while, his mechanics were off with his footwork and throwing off, you know, his back foot. And you could just tell that he wasn't comfortable out there for a good part of the season. So, I mean, he still somehow managed to look like Baker a lot of times, though, which is good. But there were just times when he was just playing off. But overall, I don't think his season was as awful as what we want to make it, because, you know, several of the picks probably shouldn't have been picks if those guys catch the ball. You know, if he has a better offensive line, his numbers are probably better. So, you know, there's factors there to where I can see him improving, you know, being able to bounce back because of the outside factors before he even works on himself. So I think he's going to be all right, and I think if we get the right people in, I think that's just going to speed up his progression that much more.
Yeah. Last comment for me is I think that I think you're spot on, and I think if we get a coach in here that can really establish the running game, take advantage of those weapons, I think we're going to see a much different Baker in 2020. He clearly wants to lead this team, and he wants to take a big step. And according to some of his press conferences, but take advantage of Chubb and Hunt, and I think the field will open wide open for OBJ and for Jarvis, and I think that's where we're going to start to see Baker shine. And he's got two big strengths that I think are critical. He's got a heck of an arm, which you need to be able to drive the ball on Lake Erie in Cleveland. He's got a big arm, and he's tough as nails. This is a kid that, I mean, if you want, I don't know that there's a tougher quarterback in the NFL right now, to be honest with you. The guy is just, you're not going to keep him off the field. And I really appreciate that about him. And I think, I think everybody knows it. He doesn't have to keep proving it. I think we all know it. Now he doesn't need to prove it with his mouth, or, you know, he just needs to go out there and execute now. And I hope he has a great offseason. So I'm looking forward to for the new season, and unfortunately, we got to wait a little bit. But I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah, we've got a few hoops to jump through first, but I'm sure it'll be here before we know it. So who's your guy?
Who's the guy? Is it going to be McDaniels? Is it going to be Sala? Is it going to be Schwartz? Who are you leaning towards?
Well, I'm going to let you give your pick, because I'm actually going to give my pick near the end of the second segment on this.
So the great. So I actually think I want Sala. I think it's going to end up being McDaniels, even though I think there's going to be, before it's all said and done, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some drama there. But the Haslams want McDaniels, so I think that's what they'll end up getting. But I like Salah. I like a defensive guy. I like a fiery guy that can lead the team and hold the guys accountable. But we'll see what happens. We don't get a vote, I don't think. So
no, we don't. I can tell you, I won't be disappointed if it's either one of those guys.
So. Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
All right, Eric, why don't you give your Twitter handle one more time for everybody so I can give you a follow?
Yeah. At Benefits Jedi, you'll know me as Apex Dog. And, definitely seek me out on Twitter. I always follow back and look forward to chatting with fellow Browns fans.
All right, Eric, you take care. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Rod.
We're going to welcome my brother Jeff in to the podcast now. Jeff, how's it going?
All right, Rod. Here we are again, right? 2 years later?
Yeah. We've been down this road before. I think we knew some of this was coming. So, I don't think we knew for sure about the GM, but it's not that big of a surprise. It didn't catch me totally off guard. Let's put it that way.
Well, and that's, to me, that's kind of a sad statement, that you almost expect this kind of dysfunction year in and year out. The way everybody felt about John Dorsey, let's just say prior to Freddie Kitchens having his issues, okay, mm-hmm. Was that John Dorsey was really on a pedestal with pretty much everybody. He got a lot of leeway in a lot of his draft picks. People felt like Dorsey was, this mid-round whisperer, myself included. He was able to maximize value for everything. It's kind of surprising, but not surprising to me now, to listen to the chatter about, Dorsey's not here anymore, so he must have really sucked. It's just amazing to me how fast people pile on somebody once they're gone.
Yeah, it happens fast. I know there are some things that have come out, about him wanting to be in charge and exerting his authority and things like that. But hey, I'm having a hard time with really, wanting to put all kinds of blame on him and just say that he was, just not a good GM and everything. He's beyond a doubt the best talent evaluator we've had in Cleveland and as long as I can remember.
I would agree. I mean, Phil Savage was up there. I would agree. Particularly like I said, in terms of maximizing mid-round value. Every GM's going to have misses. We can look at the draft historically, and everybody misses, even in the first round. I mean, the NFL draft's a crapshoot. It just is.
It does. Totally.
And when you're going out and filling roster spaces, in let's face it, we have a short time frame to do that here every year, because we've got to win now. So we've got to go out and find guys that are going to help us win now. Again, you're going to miss on some guys. So, I have a real problem with the way Dorsey is being viewed now by a lot of people. What was he brought in here to do? And how far down that path did he get us? Okay. Everybody's saying, and you and I have said it all year long, the offensive line is weak, we need help. Well, look at next year's draft. Next year's draft is loaded, particularly at the offensive tackle position. Dorsey knew that, right? So he left some flexibility on the offensive line so he could go out and hopefully backfill that position in the upcoming draft. You can't do everything at once. Listening to people talk now, you sent me something earlier about somebody who tweeted you something that you know, anybody should be able to step in and immediately win with this roster. That just doesn't happen in the NFL. Doesn't happen in any sport. You know,
there's two things. Yeah, it takes time, and the roster is not going to be the same. And whoever comes in is going to change some things. It's going to take time for the new roster to gel a little bit. And I mean, you just have to be realistic. First of all, this roster is not a top five roster in the NFL. I think a lot of people in Cleveland think it is. It's not. It's a whole heck of a lot better than it was a couple of years ago, and Dorsey's responsible for that. But it is not a top five roster, guys. It still needs work, and John Dorsey knew that.
Well, and coming from 1-31, it's pretty remarkable that it's as good as it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, from that perspective, you know, for people to think, yeah, the Browns had a great chance of being a winning team this year. If not a contending team this year, I would put that all on the ability of the past two regimes to put assets in place to be able to establish that kind of a roster in a very short window. And, you know, yes, it happens every year. A team will surprise people, but that's just not realistic to expect, you know, from a team that's gone through as much dysfunction, as much turnover, as many issues as we've had with our football team in the last 20 years. This organization has just proven that it's not going to do it right. It's going to just continue to do the same things over and over and over, and that is frustrating as hell to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you. That's what I wrote last night and put out today. It was kind of trying to put out a path for how they could change that. And I think the opportunity's there for them to do it differently this time, but they still have to do it differently. So,
we certainly want that to happen, right?
Right. It doesn't mean it will.
You have to at some point question ownership's willingness and ability to make that happen. You know, do they really care enough about wins and losses to commit to having the right kind of organization put together? Or are they just sort of going through the motions and convincing the fan base that, well, gee, you know, we're going to get it right this time. I think it says a lot right now that every other team with an opening has gone out and found their guy. And the Browns are still dilly-dallying and interviewing every assistant that has, you know, any potential and trying to, you know, make it look like, boy, we're really doing our due diligence this time. You know, we're going to get it right this time. The reality is that, you know, no matter who you pick is going to be only incrementally different from who you had last year. It's going to be an offensive coordinator with little or no head coaching experience, who is going to be expected to come in and win right away. And that's a formula for disaster.
Well, and that's true, Jeff. But on the other hand, there's, you know, two things going on here. These other vacancies were filled quickly. And the two vacancies that were filled yesterday by the Giants and the Panthers, the Browns didn't want.
Shockers.
They were shockers. The Browns weren't going to get either one of those guys.
Yes.
So really didn't damage the Browns. So, you know, I've got to call it a head coach board. It didn't damage the Browns board at all. Okay, so if you think of the Browns as going after the top coordinator that's out there, the Browns are in a great position right now because they don't have competition. So they should be really thinking about this now, kind of slowing the clock down a little bit and trying to make sure that they're making a good choice. They want to get somebody in there because time is of the essence here, because they need the new coach in the building. They need to set up figure out who's coming with them as far as a GM. They need to set up this new structure, and they need to go through a laundry list of other things, you know, heading into the NFL draft and everything else. But it's really key that they take these few days and do this right and find at least who they feel is the right guy and not just go knee-jerk like it feels like the New York Giants did. It felt like the Giants kind of lost their guy to the Panthers and said, well, we're going to sign this guy who's in the building right now then, you know, before we lose somebody else. Now, you know, I don't know. Maybe Judge turns out to be a great coach, but it sure seems like the Giants kind of freaked out, you know, when Rhule signed with the Panthers and they just signed their guy. And it's like, yeah, we don't want to do this. So, you know.
And that may be the case, but I think what you see as them doing their due diligence, I see as incompetence by ownership. I think all they're doing at this point is convincing the fan base that this time is going to be different, when in reality, they're really not doing anything differently than they've done in the past. If there was a guy out there, if the guy was McCarthy, who was, you know, really going to have the staying power to fix this organization, that guy wasn't coming here just because of the history. The reality right. is nobody who can go out and pick their job is going to pick this one.
Correct.
The person who's going to end up in this job, again, is only going to be incrementally different, marginally different than Freddie Kitchens. If you look at Stefanski, and that's the name I hear a lot, okay, he was the runner-up. He was Podesta's guy in 2018. Okay, well, at that point in time, when they were talking to Stefanski and they were talking to Freddie Kitchens, Stefanski actually had less experience as an interim offensive coordinator than Freddie Kitchens did.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
right.
So let's play armchair quarterback and say, well, boy, you know, if the Browns had only just made a better decision last year and picked Stefanski instead of Freddie Kitchens, you know, they would have won 10 games and, you know, he'd be a successful coach going forward. Well, how could they have possibly known that last year? How could they have possibly made that decision based on what they knew at the time? Okay, he was less experienced than Freddie. Freddie had worked with Baker, had some success with Baker. People loved his gunslinger attitude. You know, they loved his play calling last year. Okay, only when things started going south this year and guys weren't playing well, did it suddenly become, well, we should have hired Stefanski.
Okay. Well, I think there's probably as many people saying Williams over Stefanski right now, you know, a year ago, right now, right. Stefanski, you know, he's got more experience. And, you know, I think there's definitely some positives to him. You'll hear the negatives too, but,
right.
You know, I guess we just don't know what the Browns board is because they had McCarthy in the building and they let him go.
Right.
You know, so I don't think he was as high on their list. They were talking to him. I'm trying to think of the exact timing. I guess they interviewed him after Dorsey was already gone, right?
Right.
So, you know, it kind of seemed like he made a lot more sense if Dorsey was still around. So maybe they had that interview scheduled. And then, you know, before Dorsey left, he came in and it just didn't seem like a fit. So he left and maybe there was no chance of that happening.
Right.
In which case, the Browns' top guys are all still on their board. But we don't know how that board sits.
Right. Well, which is fine. And you know, again, I don't think at this point of the seven or eight names that are still out there, there's a huge drop-off or advantage to any of these guys. I think you're looking at a guy who is going to be extremely challenged in a very difficult environment and is going to be expected to win right away. And if he doesn't, he's going to be gone. So for them to talk about investing all this time to find the right guy, I think what they're trying to do is, again, convince the fan base. Well, you know, if he flames out, it's his fault. It's not ours. Okay. And that is dysfunction at its height. That is ownership not taking responsibility for the fact that they've blown it now five times in 7 years. Okay. And go ahead.
Let me ask you this. What kind of search, what kind of interviewing process would you be satisfied with as a fan to show you that it's being handled differently this time?
That's a great question, because I don't think it's possible to convince me at this point that they would go through the process any differently than they have in the past.
Yeah, and I think that's see it as Browns fans. So I think even if they are doing things differently, doing it right, I don't think we're going to see that or believe that until...
No, that's
this,
true.
Until the structure's in place and we see... what do you want to say? And we see the results from it.
Right. And again, that's what they are hoping, I believe, to have happen is that, you know, they're going to get lucky and put enough wins together next year to be able to say, ooh, look, we finally got it right this time. Okay. But yeah. They've done that so many times already that I think they've really pissed away any credibility that they could have in that regard. So now what you have is an organization that the best coaches don't want to come to. And you're going to be taking a chance on anybody that comes in. And I just think that unfortunately, that doesn't bode well for the next guy or guys. Okay. That no matter who is in that seat, the pressure is going to be, bring in my people, fix the guys that we're hanging on to, and put wins up right away, because we don't want to hear about another 2-year plan. You know, you've heard from plenty of fans already who think, you know, just put the right guy in there and we're going to win the Super Bowl next year. Okay. Well, guess what? We're only 2 seasons away from 1-31. Right. That's not realistic thinking. Realistically, whoever comes in here is going to put their system in place, is going to put their people in place, is going to turn the roster to the type of players that they want. Okay. And that doesn't happen in 1 year. Now, you know, yes, Andy Reid can show up in Kansas City and you know, turn things around quickly. Andy Reid isn't coming here. Okay. We're going to get an offensive coordinator with, you know, a less than stellar record, as a head coach, more than likely. Okay.
Yeah. So, I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, we're talking about the draft not being, being kind of a crapshoot. Overall in the NFL, when you're hiring a head coach and you're hiring somebody without experience, it's almost the same thing across
Correct.
The NFL. Okay. The Browns have just so happened that, and you can debate whether anybody they've had was worthy of being a head coach, because not many of them have gotten a true chance. Some of them were just plain misses. Some of them didn't have the talent around them. Some of them got ridden out of town before they even had a chance to finish their cup of coffee.
Right.
It's about the same thing. So the Browns have this big slate. To me, there's somebody on this list that's going to be a good head coach. And the reality is we're not looking for the next Paul Brown. We're looking for somebody who's going to win. Okay. I mean,
well,
you have
to walk before
you can run. I want somebody who's going to be here three or four, five years. I don't care. You know, at this point, we need some stability. I mean, I hope the next coach we hire is turns out to be great. But if he turns out to be good, I'll be happy.
We thought we had stability when Dorsey came here. Okay, we thought, all right, we've got an experienced NFL personnel guy. He's bringing stability to the front office now. Ownership is backing away, letting him make the football decisions. You know, that was the type of stability that this franchise had been searching for. You know, going back in prior regimes, yes, there were football men, but not somebody that you could just hand the reins to. Okay, and Dorsey was that kind of guy. The failure of him to make it out of here 2 years really has me questioning, you know, who can come in and be, if you know, if you don't win the first year, be credible enough to get a second year. And if you can't get a second year, then you're just doing this every year over and over and over and over, which we're not far from right now. I mean, yes, many other NFL teams replace their head coach and they take chances on young guys and they miss. Okay. Shermer missed here. He missed with the Giants. I don't know he's going to get too many more opportunities as a head coach. Okay.
I wouldn't.
That's just the way the NFL works. Right.
Right. Right.
But nobody has done it like we've done it here. Nobody has had this kind of turnover. Nobody has had the lack of commitment to a head coach, to a general manager, to anybody below ownership. And look, here comes the golf reference. Okay.
Ready.
We're looking for alignment. Right. That's the buzzword. We're looking for alignment. Okay. You know, my father-in-law was a low handicapper.
Mm-hmm.
You played with him. I mean, he was a low handicapper. He was a good golfer. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
He went through a lot of putters. Okay. Mm-hmm. He probably once a year he'd pick up a new putter and he'd try it. Okay. And he'd see, is this putter going to, you know, knock those last couple of strokes off my game? Right. The reality is it's not the putter. It's the guy holding the putter.
Yeah.
Okay. And he knew that, but he kept trying it. Okay.
Right.
He kept trying. Right. Taking that one step further, I play with some guys who can't hit the ball down the middle to save their life. Okay, they just can't. They can't hit the ball down the middle because of the way they swing. Okay,
right.
So what they do is they adjust their stance so that when they hit the ball, it curves back to where they want it. Right?
Yeah.
It either. Yeah. And you know, 99 times out of 100, it's a slice. Okay, so they set up to the left, and they you know, they slice the ball back into play. Okay,
yeah.
I tell them, if you don't set up straight, you have a 0% chance of ever hitting the ball straight. Okay, but what they've learned over the course of time is if they want to enjoy the game, they have to accept what they are. And what they are is a slice hitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're going to set up that way and they're going to keep the ball in play, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So let's bring this back to football. Okay. I would submit to you that this elusive idea of alignment doesn't exist. There's no such thing as perfect alignment in an organization. There are always going to be differing opinions. There are always going to, and that's healthy in an organization. Okay. When you bring people at, you know, the management level, you bring them in, they come in and they present differing opinions to ownership. Ownership has the ability then to decide, you know, what's good, what's bad, and move forward. The problem with the Browns organization under this ownership is they've listened to everybody. And everybody's been right at one time or another. And everybody's been wrong at one time or another.
Yep.
And ownership has never taken responsibility for the fact that these were just people telling you how to run your organization. But ultimately, you're the person running it. And if you don't take responsibility for running your organization, you're never going to fix the organization. So, you know, I hope that whoever comes in next is either A, a genius, or B, damn lucky, and puts some wins together, because that's the only way that you're going to break this cycle. Okay, it's not going to change otherwise, because the guy who owns the team and his wife and son-in-law and whoever else is involved in the organization, okay,
right,
they are condoning this sort of year in and year out cluster that keeps going on. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they keep coming back to the fans and saying, be patient, we're going to get it right. Be patient, I'm going to get it right. How about you be patient, Mr. Owner? How about you hire somebody? And I don't disagree with your comment at all. Of these 7 or 8 guys, I would say probably 3/4 of them could be successful head coaches in the NFL, given the right environment.
Yeah,
the problem is that environment almost never exists, and it doesn't exist here.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, maybe the best thing that could happen would be to, you know, and I really don't have a favorite. People are pro or con on Josh McDaniels. There's talk that he may not even, you know, that he may back out and everything. But, you know, maybe the best thing would be for him to come and sign, you know, a big contract with the Browns, to where they feel are kind of locked into him for a period of time. And
right,
you know, and maybe that would change things around, because, you know, you take one of these other guys who's not signing a big contract and you can let him go after a year, you know, then you're kind of in the same spot again. So,
yeah. So, well, and that's the message you keep sending to the fan base. And unfortunately, as long as the fan base keeps swallowing that, there's really no incentive for ownership to do anything different. Okay. I mean, the NFL being the revenue sharing model that it is, the fact that the Browns games sell out year in and year out, no matter what kind of crap is out on the field. I mean, what other organization gets a pass, particularly in this town? Okay.
Right.
The Indians have been a competitive team for how long has Francona been around? 7 or 8 years. They've been competitive. And you could walk up to the ticket booth and buy a ticket to the game pretty much every day of the week. Okay, because fans believe that the Dolan ownership is cheap. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's been a competitive organization every year. But the fans make their displeasure known by not showing up. Okay. The Browns have enjoyed sellouts year in and year out, no matter what kind of crap they put out on the field, and the fans will never hold ownership responsible. So,
yeah.
Hey, if you're going to give the guy a pass, this is what you're going to get.
True. All right, Jeff, as we wrap up here, I'm going to pin you down, because we're going to have a new head coach in Cleveland probably by Saturday.
Yeah.
Who's it going to be?
I'm going to go with Brian Daboll. He's been here.
That's going to thrill the hell out of the fans, Jeff.
I think he's an easy sell. I think he's a perfect guy to be Patsy number 12.
Mm. I think the Browns want McDaniels. I don't think they're going to get a deal done with him. I think they're gonna end up going after Stefanski. That's my thought. But that's just my thought. So
I don't disagree with that hire. I think he was D. Podesta's guy in the past. I think he had a good year this year with the Vikings. He's a rising guy. He's got as much potential to be successful as anybody else on the list. I just would hate to have, you know, see him come here and have his career ruined.
Yeah, well, I think he's going to offer more than what people think. So I think we'll see what happens. Hey, like we said, there's some good options there. But
I think there's a number of fine football men there for sure.
I think so.
Okay.
I think
so. The real question is will they get a chance here?
That's right. That's right.
So
we will know soon.
You got it.
All right. Good talking to you, Jeff.
All right, Rod.
All right. This has been the Browns Blitz, and we will catch you next time.